Hello and welcome to In The Frame. It's our final episode of the year, but fear not, we're just taking 1 week off and we'll be back in January to wrap up the series. Today's guest is actor Lucy May Barker. Lucy is currently playing Sophie in the West End production of Mamma Mia at the Novello Theatre, which is the same theatre where she made her West End debut in Spring Awakening in 2009. Lucy previously played Sophie in both the UK and international touring productions of Mamma Mia. Just a few of her other credits include Earthquakes in London at the National Theatre, The Crucible at the Regent's Park Open Air Theatre, the UK tour of Oklahoma, the West End revival of Sweeney Todd starring Michael Ball and Imelda Staunton, and Tharp at the Park Theatre. I recently sat down with Lucy backstage at the Novello Theatre. We had a really chilled out, fun chat. Lucy is hilarious and I love her energy, and I also really love her journey into the industry. It's such an interesting story about how she got to where she is today. We discussed lots of things, including her childhood, making her West End debut at such a young age in Spring Awakening, plus, of course, her journey with Mamma Mia. Here's the interview. Lucy May Barker, you're in the frame.
I am in the actual frame.
We're in this, like, secret room at the Novello Theatre. I've just been going upstairs, downstairs. I went, like, across the stage and then up some more stairs. And then I'm in this, like, secret little room.
It's fully big enough to be, like, a studio flat. I mean, they could definitely charge rent.
Yes.
They could definitely charge kind of, like, anywhere from £2,000 to £3,000 a week, because that's what London prices are like now.
I'm moving in. You're just like, bought a place in London, right?
No, I've moved out. I sold my flat in London. And I bought a house in Margate by the sea. And I just love it. It's just the best... For me, like mentally, even just physically, just breathing in that fresh sea air every day. Because I lived in London for 10 years and I loved it, but I just didn't switch off for 10 years. And now I feel a real difference between my kind of personal life and my work life. I feel like when I
That's
come
important.
Into London, yeah, I feel like I come into London to do the job, and it feels... I feel like I, you know, put even more into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do.
I love my little sleepy seaside life.
I'm so jealous.
Hun's come for a weekend. I've got plenty of spare bedrooms. Basically going to open up a B&B if the acting thing doesn't work out.
So. Book me in. I'm booked. I'm staying. I'm coming to visit.
Hun's do.
So you are preparing for Christmas.
Yes.
On a Greek island.
Christmas
on
a Greek island. The... 312 shows in a week Christmas schedule.
So I was going to say, what is it like doing a West End show or any show at Christmas time? Because obviously everyone's really excited and everything's bright and lovely, but you do have to work a lot, right?
It is hard work. The Christmas schedules for anyone, I think we probably have it easy, actually. I think Panto is the... I mean, that is like working in this industry to the max, like 87 shows a week. I think, but joking apart, I think it's like 12, some people do like 12 shows a week.
Three show days.
Yeah, 3 show days. I mean, it's incredible. And the stamina that you build from doing that, I think is, you kind of take that with you into your career. When you do Panto at the start of your career, if you're able to do that.
Have you ever done Panto?
Yes, I did. I did it in... Llandudno. And I did Panto in Lincoln as, like, when I was a kid. Well, like one of the babes. But do you know what? Doing a show at Christmas, it's super special, because actually, generally, it's people having kind of early Christmas presents or part of their Christmas present, or perhaps they got the tickets last Christmas or last birthday. So you definitely, it's hard work, but it is a privilege, because these people, you know, have saved up their money and they've chosen to come and see us and spend their special event time with us. And I know how it feels. We all know how it feels to save up for something and then finally get it and have that day out, and then you go for your meal beforehand and your cocktails, and oh, it's just lush. It's so festive and lush, and yeah, I really love it, and it's amazing to be part of that, and everyone's in their snuggly jumpers and have had a few drinks, and it just chill for the evening. It's, you know, it's super lovely.
I love the idea of you doing Panto as a babe. So what were you like when you were a child? Were you a really stagey kid?
I was really chubby.
She was chubby.
I was really chubby, yeah. Aww. I was like the Michelin man. I really was. There's this hilarious photo of me. I've not got my phone with me. I will send it to you. I'll show it to you. And it is a classic. And I've got this. Basically, anybody who kind of knows me, I basically just crack out this picture all the time. It's me in a silver gilet. And my fringe is like a bit dodgy. And I've just got the roundest, cutest face. And it's just... That sums me up as a kid. But then I lost all my poppy fat, and then I was kind of cute again for a while, and then it fluctuates. My weight fluctuates actually my whole life, not just as a kid. But
looks aside,
performance wise, I just have this image of myself as a kid, and it always makes me laugh. I've loved it forever. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do. Uh-huh. I'm so lucky that I get to do it still.
What roles did you play when you were growing up? I love, because I played Daddy Warbucks when I was about 10 years
Tons.
Old.
I was Annie on the tour.
Oh my god.
For like 3 years, like on and off.
Well, that's far more sensible casting, though.
I mean, it was just, I think you'd smash Daddy Warbucks. I think we should have a little Together at Last.
We'll do a reunion show.
You can
do Annie and I'll do Daddy Warbucks.
I
and
love
I'm still
Annie.
I'm still not appropriate to play Daddy Warbucks. I'm gonna grow into it one day.
You will.
What other roles? What school plays did you do? What's like school productions did
school
you do?
School productions.
Because I love this question. People come up with the best. Sometimes it's
hilarious. Do you know what, actually? There, I do have a video also of me playing Titania in A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, that's a good
I mean
one.
That is ambitious, isn't it? Wasn't it at school, it was at Stagecoach. I went to Stagecoach. Right. We did like, I mean, that's ambitious, isn't it? I think I was about seven.
You've got 3 hours rehearsal a week.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
What angel wakes me from my flowery bed? It's me. I've got this video of me, and I basically, I mean, there's nothing going on behind the eyes, but, you know, I'm giving it my best shot. What else did I do? I loved Little Shop of Horrors when I was like 13. I think I was like, actually probably about 14, 15.
Where did you grow up?
In Lincolnshire.
And did you get to come to London quite a lot? Were you aware of the West End?
Well,
this sort of thing?
Funnily enough, my Christmas present, most years that I can remember, one of my main Christmas presents would be a weekend in London and watching shows, because I loved it so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, we would go down on maybe like a Friday night or something, or a Friday afternoon and see like a Friday night show and then like a matinee and then we'd really cram it in. And yeah, I just loved it. We'd stay in the Travel Lodge. Mm-hmm. Classy. But you know what you're getting with the Travel Lodge.
And then Annie UK Tour comes along.
Annie UK Tour, yeah. I mean, it was just...
Did
best
you like
time.
Lap up every moment?
Yeah.
Did it become hard? Was it a challenge, or were you every part of you was like, this is
no,
me?
No, not one part of me found it hard, I don't think. I just loved every minute, because when you're a kid, you can just kind of throw yourself into something without, you have no kind of sense of something, and something you're so passionate about as well as a kid. It's not work, is it, in any way?
You're out of school.
Yeah, my God, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Who was your adult?
Never did any of my school work at all. Sorry, everybody.
Who was your adult cast? Who were like, because you always idolised as a kid,
yeah,
the people you're working with.
So, unfortunately, it wasn't you as my Daddy Warbucks. It was Mark Winter.
Oh, amazing.
Mark Winter was Daddy Warbucks, and Louise English was Grace Farrell. Sue Pollard was Miss Hannigan.
Stop.
And Sue is one of these amazing women. She just remembers everybody that she meets. She's got this incredible brain. She'll be like, oh, that's Sue from the chip shop from 1995. Like, literally,
like,
she remembers everybody. She is a walking name database. It's absolutely amazing.
So you've seen her lots over the years?
Do you know what? I've seen her out and about, and she's always just so brilliant and always remembers me. And you think, oh, my God, I was like a kid that you worked with on and off. Do you know what I mean? You just think, oh, it's absolutely amazing. And, I mean, she is one of the greats in terms of kind of showbiz and theatre and performance. So she's a classic, isn't she? Mm. Yeah, Sue's amazing. And I learned so much on that job, probably not consciously. And then, yeah, got to kind of doing it when I was an adult. I wrote to Pippa Alien, because Wicked was one of my Christmas present trips. And I was obsessed. And then I wrote to Pippa Alien and was like, can I audition for the show? or can I do some like work experience? Like, oh my God, like what did I think was going to happen at 14 years
old? I love these stories.
But also you don't, that's your most truthful self, isn't it? You're just, it's just a kid going, I want to do this so bad. I will do anything I possibly can. And I think we lose a bit of that. And it's actually probably a shame that we lose a bit of that. And it probably, it gets, I think as long as you're being totally true to yourself and you're not doing it to, you know, try and get ahead in the wrong way, I think that that truthful passion can only end up serving you well, I think, if it's, yeah, applied in the right way. But
100%. But you're so innocent because you're outside of this world, like peering in, aren't
totally,
you?
Totally, just desperately dreaming of that life. And that's what you, that's what I have to remember. We were saying that in the dressing room the other day. It was like a long week last week. And of course, the weather's turning and it's, it gets, it starts to get hard. And it's weird things like the temperature of the theatre. You're going from really hot to cold, so that'll affect your voice a little bit. And yeah, generally the kind of winter creaks and cracks start to get into your body. And we were at the end of the week, we were like, okay, let's just think about how getting through the show tonight is going to be about gratitude. And you think about that one kid who is seeing a show for the first time in the audience, and they're going to watch it and they're going to go, oh my God, I want to do that with my life. And you go, oh my God, that's amazing. It's so amazing. So yeah, absolutely, we'll smash out a show for you, little girl in row D tonight. And of course all the other people. But yeah, it's mad when you think about wanting to do it as a kid and then
actually
doing it.
So did Pippa write back to you?
She wrote back to me, yeah, and she said, you're a little bit young at the minute, obvs, and but if we have any auditions or if we have anything that would suit you, if we ever do have a kind of work experience slot available, then we'll, you know, let you know. And then it was about a year later, she'd kept my stuff on file, her assistant Natalie as well at the time, and got in touch and said, we're casting this show called Spring Awakening. Would you like to come and audition? I mean, absolutely mental, like fully mental. Like I don't think I properly like comprehended what all that was as well. And then being back in this theatre 10 years later.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, Spring Awakening, you got the lyric Hannah Smith, right?
Yeah.
And then it came into the West End here at the Novello Theatre. And there was a whole bunch of you, wasn't there? Evelyn Hoskins, Charlotte Wakefield.
Yeah, babies.
It's one of those casts, it just started so many careers. Yeah. And you've all gone on to do amazing things. And you also were all still, like, playing teenagers.
I know.
As well.
I'm still playing a 20-year-old. I mean, 10 years come later. On. I mean, I'm pretty happy with that. I'm milking that for as long as I possibly can. Sarah Poyser, who played my mum, who played Donna last year, we were at our friend's wedding yesterday, and she took a picture of me outside some Christmas lights and posted it on Twitter. And I actually look about 16. I'm absolutely thrilled. More of that. I'm like, let's crop that and put that on my spotlight, please.
Run, new headshot.
Yeah,
alert.
Fully.
We'll use it for this interview.
Yeah, lush. I got a proper red nose from the cold as well. I look like a little red nose reindeer.
So when you go into a show like Spring Awakening, sorry, how old were you? You're like 15, 16?
I was 16, yeah.
16. What was that experience like? I mean, how, when you look back now and reflect, I imagine it's almost like a different person again.
Totally is,
because you can't, how can you comprehend? How can you digest? How can you take in what was going on?
Do you know what? I was so lucky. I think I had loads of brilliant people around me in that cast. The adults really stepped up, and actually, it was a massive thing to just be, there was literally just a few adults and all of us, in inverted commas, kids. We ranged from, I was the youngest, I was 16, and then there was basically like loads of 18-year-olds, loads of 19-year-olds, there was a handful of 20, you know, you're kids at that age, you're absolutely kids, and they really stepped up and went above and beyond in terms of supporting us all and trying to gently guide us all in the right directions, and if one of us would, you know, make a mistake, not in terms of like singing the wrong words or just in behaviour perhaps or application of ourselves to a certain thing, they were so giving with their time and their advice. And yeah, Sean Thomas and Richard Cordery were the two, were adult male and adult female, and they were Amazing. And what a feat. Basically, just loads of teenagers just running about the West End.
In the West End. And what I think is really interesting is doing this podcast, unintentionally, I've spoken to quite a lot of people who have had different routes into the industry and who haven't just applied to drama school and then got an agent and then got... They've had lots of different routes. So what's your kind of slant on it? Having had a different route into the industry, are there times when you're like, oh, I wish I did it a different way? Are you really grateful for that experience because it makes you a different person and it gives you different skills and different experiences?
Yeah, for sure. Kind of a bit of all of that, actually. There's been times where I've been in a rehearsal room and I've thought, I don't have a clue what I'm doing here. Do you know what I mean? You go, I wish I had something more to draw on.
Yeah.
But again, that will pass. And then actually, if you've not taken that specific route, you'll probably bring something different that somebody who had taken the opposite route to you. You know, so it's swings and roundabouts. I right now sat here, there's definitely been times like I had about a year and a half to 2 years really where I didn't have any work. I was going to auditions and just not getting any of the jobs, literally like to a point where I wasn't even getting past the first round. And it was just, it's so soul destroying. And you kind of, at that point you go, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I don't know what the problem is. And like in that period of my life, it was very much a, oh God, I'm totally blagging it. Essentially everybody's found out that I'm just blagging it. So you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then right now sat here, I'm so grateful for that period of time. And I'm so great. Yeah, I wouldn't change anything. Thankfully, I mean, maybe partied a little bit too much. but apart from that, I think, I generally wouldn't change anything. And I think every route that you take, you take for a reason. Perhaps, I don't know if I, sometimes I believe in that, sometimes I don't. But yeah, it is mad. The routes into a creative industry, it is mad the different routes that you can kind of take to get there. Yeah. And you hear everybody's different stories and, you know, you look at people who have literally led a different life for 40 years and then suddenly gone, do you know what? I want to be an actor. And then they suddenly decide to do it. Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's true of many industries, but certainly a creative industry when you bring so much of yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
And then what you have managed to achieve, if you've done completely different things, so you've gone off and you've worked at the National, and you've done, I saw you in Thark at the Park Theatre.
I loved that show, that was a great show.
It was like an intimate, kind of different, it was like a comedy, very specific like style of humour. And of course, then you did your like classic big revival, and you did Sweeney Todd.
Yeah,
and then Mamma Mia couldn't be any more different from all of those other shows.
I know.
I mean, even very different to Spring Awakening.
Yeah, for sure.
So how do you approach that kind of versatility? Is that something that you were quite like, I really want to do different things? Have you had to work hard to prove to people that you can do different jobs? And how do you do that?
Do you know what? When I first came out of Spring Awakening, I didn't have an agent when I went into Spring Awakening because of the story that I told you there. And I signed with this gorgeous lady called Jean Diamond, and she actually really advised me and helped me and kind of shaped me and said, look, you're going to finish Spring Awakening, and of course the musical theatre kid in you wants to just audition for Les Mis and get it and then spend the next 8 years of your life in Les Mis because you love it so much.
Yeah.
She said, but actually you will, if you make some, while you've got the choice, because of course we were the hot young things coming out of Spring Awakening, and we were so lucky. We had such an amazing platform. She said, while you've got choices, you've got all different things that you could be doing. You've got obviously not job offers on the table, but loads of different people want to bring you in the room and audition you. And she said, while you've got this choice, while you've got this brilliant buffet of creativity in front of you, she said, make some good choices now, and then actually you'll be able to sit in a job for a few years and just absolutely live out your musical theatre dreams. And she was right, she says, as she enters her fifth contract of Mamma Mia. I mean, but I love it. I literally love it. And I've loved all those other jobs as well. And I'm actually really looking forward to, I'm not looking forward to leaving Mamma Mia because I think I'm probably going to cry for about 3.5 weeks solidly before and after.
Yeah.
Because it's just been so enormous in my life. But I am looking forward to doing something different. And but it's so hard. It's so hard to leave a job that I love so much. Mm. It's going to be so difficult to actually finally say, yes, I am going to walk out of that stage tour forever. Oh God, that's so awful. I can't even think about it.
When it first came up, when this show first came around, had you seen it? Was Sophie like a role on your bucket list? Where were you at?
I'd seen it, I loved it. I loved that I feel it's a real accessible musical. Mm-hmm. People who don't even think they like musicals can come and see Mamma Mia and really enjoy
it's
it.
So irresistible.
You know, it really is. I think it really is a gem actually, and it's got a real special place in theatre history, I would go to say.
Oh my gosh, definitely.
Do you know what I mean? I think partly because of the accessibility, about what I just said about people who literally think I don't like musicals can come and watch Mamma Mia and have a really good night. I think that is amazing. And I do get that some people don't want to go and see Oklahoma. They don't want to go and see Rodgers and Hammerstein classic. They don't want to go and see Phantom of the Opera because that's not for them. I totally get that. I mean, you're totally wrong, but but that to a lot of people is musical theatre, is musicals.
Yeah.
And I think Mamma Mia has opened that door, and maybe that person who's come to see Mamma Mia is going to go, do you know what, I might give Phantom a try. And they might go and see it and they might go, wow, what an amazing spectacle. So
it'll be stepping stone. I think that's right, actually. I'm sure there's lots of people who are kind of dragged along to come and see Mamma Mia who don't want to be there.
Yeah, for sure.
And their partner or their parent or whoever it is
has kind of made
them come and book those tickets. And then they'll sit there for the first 10 minutes and try and pretend they're miserable. And then they'll be up on their feet by that mega mix at the end.
Totally. And it doesn't take itself too seriously, but then at the same time it does take itself seriously. You know, we really commit and we tell a real honest story, I think. Obviously set to the music of ABBA, which is exactly as you describe it, irresistible. What was the question? We was on another question, weren't we?
Had you seen it?
Yes. Oh, and actually I had seen it and I loved it. And when I went in for it originally, and they recalled me and said, we want to see you for Sophie. And I was like, are they sure? I just didn't think that I had never put myself in that, because I'd always been this kind of supporting lead, or I'd always been the funny friend, or I just always assumed that that's where I would sit. So I think I said to my agent, I was like, will you actually just double check before I learn all of this? Can you just double check that they definitely do actually want to see me for Sophie? Because I feel like maybe they don't. And he's like, yes, they do. So then I went in for it, and then in again and in again and in again. And then, I got the job and I couldn't believe it. And I was super scared because it was the biggest role I'd ever played, apart from Annie, which is arguably the greatest female lead in musical theatre. It was just enormous, and it still is enormous, and I love it and find different parts of it challenging at different times, depending on what I have in the tank. But anyone who's played Sophie, of which there are so many amazing women, anyone who's played the role will tell you, you kind of get to the end and you go, I did that. I accomplished that.
At glance, you don't think it is a tough thing, but actually it's in a difficult place in your voice, right?
Oh my God, you so know. You're exactly right. It is. It's in the funniest, weirdest place. And my voice has got so much stronger. It's literally been like the bestest ever training for my vocal stamina, this show. It's been so great. And it kind of crosses the place that it sits in my voice as well, kind of crosses genres a little bit. And so it's just been essentially weightlifting championship for my vocal cords.
What's your kind of day-to-day routine like? Do you have things that you do to look after your voice, and certain things that you eat when you're in show mode? How do you look after yourself?
So Mel and Sophie, who share a dressing room with me, who I share a dressing room with them, I just eat all the time. I just eat all the time, and I eat. All the wrong things.
So many people will be so jealous.
To be fair, I do go spin class quite a lot, but it's mostly because I'm so scared of ever being in, like, I've done a few shows before, like on tour, and you've not kind of, you've not eaten quite properly, because again, it's, it can be really hard on tour when all there is like a Starbucks, and you're just like, oh my God, I've had the same Starbucks salad now for like three days in a row. It's because I'm so scared of ever doing a show where I feel like I've not eaten enough, because that's horrible, that feeling, isn't it, when you're just like super hungry and don't feel fueled. I always now eat at the half. I've always got something totally inappropriate for my voice.
Oh my gosh, like what? Like, what's your ultimate like devil snack?
No, do you know what? I've got a few favourites.
I want to know
everything. I've got a few full out favourites. The chicken salad from Pret is my fave. I love it.
That's still just healthy.
It is healthy, to be fair. But like adding a simple pistachio to a salad, just, oh, it just takes it to the next level. Parmesan, oh yes. Into that. I like the hoisin no duck wrap from M&S.
That's a good
for
one.
All my vegans out there. I'm so impressed with that. Love that. the veggie dumplings from Itzu. Always got them on the go. The jackfruit wings from Leon. Oh, I mean, they're so claggy. They're the worst. They're literally the worst for my voice. But I just absolutely love them. I adore them. And
a long may it continue.
Oh my God, love it.
Tell me about Maz Murray, because she's one of my favourite people on earth, and she is so talented, and she can also be a little bit naughty.
She is, I mean, she's awful. I don't like her at all. We don't get on at all. She's amazing. She's amazing. She's an amazing woman. She's an amazing performer. She just is a leading lady through and through. She just, oh. And I'm sure you've probably heard about her incredible bread that she brings in.
No.
Oh, my God.
Maz Murray, not only can she play Tanya and Donna, but she can also...
She just brings in this bread.
Make bread.
From her bakery, and it is just out of this world. So that's another thing on my food list, is Maz's bread. No, she's... Enough about Maz's bread and more about actual Maz. She's just an amazing woman. She's so funny, and she's so electric and vibrant, and exactly the kind of energy that a show like Mamma Mia is made for. And to have played Tanya and then to come back and do Donna, like, what a cool thing to do. What brilliant, brilliant achievement, and kind of, yeah, just... It's, yeah, she's amazing. Massive fan.
So in like 50 years, when you're finally not playing teenagers anymore, because I'm sure 20 years' time we'll still be here.
Hopefully, I'm still going to
be... You'll be getting
Sophie.
Younger. Which of the dynamos would you play?
I think maybe if I...
Because I can see a bit of all of them in you.
I know. I feel like I am a walking dynamo.
You'd be a
dynamo.
Wicked Rosie.
I would love... I think she's absolutely hilarious.
But you'd also nail Tanya. I can just see that
strut. I'd love
strut.
That. I would totally love
and
that.
And then you could belt out Donna, obviously.
And then I would love a Donna. I would love to crack out a Donna, for sure. Maybe I should just be... Maybe I could, like, when I'm slightly too young, be alternate with, like, the covers of the other, so I get to do all three. There we go. Solved it.
Boom.
Nailed it. Boom.
Tell me about taking this show around the world, because I find it really interesting. And people do these international tours and you get some really extreme different responses. And it kind of blows my mind. I can't remember where it is, somewhere like Japan, where they don't applaud until the end. And I was speaking to people who did Wicked there, and it was just such a different experience for them.
It is. It's totally
what where stands out? What have been some of the biggest differences and the biggest surprises?
Let me think. Do you know what? Generally, I think it's because of the music. I think because everybody is so familiar with the music, generally the response was kind of the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think where was the most difference. The thing that kind of used to make me laugh is that we'd have surtitles in some places,
right.
So the laughs would just be slightly late where they're kind of waiting to catch up with what we're saying. Generally, I think Mamma Mia is we're lucky when you take that internationally. I just sat here thinking about all the places that we went, and it was absolutely
mad. Where were your favourite places personally in terms of exploring and experiencing the culture? You were saying before you got to have Christmas in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, Christmas in Sri Lanka.
What happens on Christmas Day in Sri Lanka?
Well, we went to the Shangri-La for Christmas buffet lunch, and then we had they did this like Christmas party on the beach, and it was, I mean, it was amazing. But then there was the biggest thunderstorm I have ever seen, so we were all under this canopy.
Oh my gosh!
And I was about to say, I've got food on the brain. I was about to call it a canopy. we were all under this very small canopy, mini fish and chips. No, we were all underneath this big canopy on the beach, and honestly, there was the most unbelievable storm. It was just, it was like nothing I've ever seen before. The lightning storm, it was just mental, like on Christmas Day. It was just really random. But then we had, I think we had like two shows the next day, so we all had to kind of take it easy.
It'd be good, yeah.
You know, so but yeah, just ate loads of food and chilled, and it was nice to spend it with friends actually, because I guess friends are the family you choose. I mean, I'm super lucky. I love my family, but yeah, it was a different vibe.
When you're on tour, they kind of become your family.
And they do, absolutely. Especially when you're in an international tour, and it's just, yeah, it's a totally different experience. Touring is amazing. Touring is so brilliant.
Do you enjoy that lifestyle?
Yeah, I love touring. I mean, I think I'd find it hard after being at home and being in my house. Like, I love being in my house. I can literally just lock myself in my house. And if I've got like a day off, I just literally won't leave the house. I'm like a hermit in my house. just eating, like prepped with all the food that I need. That's it, done. I love touring. I think it is a real experience and it's really cool. And international touring, that life experience actually of the, like you were saying, the cultures, and like I loved Manila. We were in Manila for a month and it was, you know, it's totally different. We went to Jakarta, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's basically going to be underwater in about 20 years time. It's not going to exist anymore.
Gosh.
Yeah, I mean, it's, which is,
I love that you think that I may know. I'm like, sure.
Sure, Hans, yes. This is absolutely my forte. But yeah, I mean, that's horrendous. I mean, and that is the busiest place I think I've ever been. It was so crowded. And like trying to cross the road was an experience in itself. We had to have like a call, an extra call, like before when we were going to the theatre, so that we could all like learn how to cross the road in Jakarta. Like literally, it was just...
Why? How do you cross the road?
Because literally the cars just don't stop. So you have to be really... I mean, please, anyone listening who's about to go to Jakarta, please don't like take my word for this. This is just how we did it. But you literally just have to walk into the road and hope that they stop. And they will, because they obviously don't want to hit someone, because that probably means a lot of paperwork. But it's literally like that. It's, I was going to say cutthroat. I mean, that's probably the wrong way to describe it. But it really is. Jeez. Like, you literally just have to walk into the road confidently and hope that all the cars stop. And it's just zoom, like really, really, really busy. Zoom, in case you didn't know what a car was. I mean, for God's sake. I had to do a car noise.
It's
then.
A podcast. People like sound effects.
Zoom.
let's wrap up in 1 minute. So why do people still love the show? What is it? What is the kind of the magic of it? Why are people obsessed with it? Why does it still feel so fresh? What's its secret? How do we replicate it and make every other musical so successful?
Oh, ask Judy Kramer, and she probably won't tell you, because it's the bestest recipe ever. The recipe for Mamma Mia's success is probably more coveted than the KFC spice recipe. It's, I think, obviously the music, but I think the music and the story are equally as strong. So, and then I think sometimes with, in inverted commas, jukebox musical, because I think Mamma Mia is a jukebox musical, but then at the same time, it's not the story of ABBA, which, yeah, I think is, it's
like a musical in its own right.
It's a story in its own right. And I think if you take away all the songs, you'd still be interested in the story. You'd still want to know what happened. Mm. And equally, if you just had all the songs, if we had to do a concert version, it would still be brilliant.
Exactly.
And of course, the set and the lighting and the costumes, I think, are just great. And again, it's kind of like a vintage piece now because all the costumes are so kind of 90s and so...
It's so interesting because it is like an old show now. It's been going for a long time, but when you go and see it, it's still so funny and
it feels
the humour is
current,
so
doesn't it?
Relevant. It doesn't feel dated in that way. It's amazing how the kind of the characters and the relationships, that side of the story, the structure of it hasn't dated at all.
I know. And I think that's... I just think it's magic. I honestly can't put my finger on why, but at the same time, I know why it's been so successful. Mm. It's because it is brilliant, which I know is really kind of... It's kind of a lame answer, isn't it? It's been really successful because it's brilliant, but it is, and I know people feel like that when they come out of the theatre. Mm. It's just, it's happy, it's joyous, and I think there's absolutely a place for going to the theatre and coming out and feeling like you have to reevaluate your life because it's penetrated your soul. I get that, and I'm all for that, and I actually love seeing theatre and watching TV and films and reading stuff that does that to me, but I think it might be because generally life can be a bit hard, can't it? So people could come and see Mamma Mia and just be really happy for a couple of hours.
Oh my gosh, last time I saw Mamma Mia here, I literally skipped out of the theatre and I was supposed to be meeting a friend and I grabbed her and we skipped into a cocktail bar and I was like, we're not going
lush,
home.
Isn't it? It's just lush.
It gives that least of energy. It's infectious.
It really is. I'm such a massive fan.
How involved is Judy Kramer? What's she like?
She's super involved. She's an amazing woman. She's absolutely amazing woman. And she, the fact that it took her, again, I'm not sure this is entirely accurate, but it took her a long time to get this into fruition. And she just absolutely persevered because she knew deep down that it was amazing. And then you just have to look at the Mamma Mia. I mean, it's like a... It's not only a kind of brand, it's just a it's global, it's amazing. Mm. It's just amazing.
But even now you have the Mamma Mia the Party, the O2, and obviously the sequels come out. Mamma Mia is still everywhere.
Totally. And I love Mamma Mia too. I absolutely loved it. And I just love the Mamma Mia, ex-Mamma Mia cast members that you can play. It's brilliant.
I'm just not over Cher walking down those stairs singing that song.
That was just so... Wasn't it?
I can't walk downstairs sensibly anymore. A part of me still wants to just sing that song and pretend I'm Cher, but that's just me.
She tweeted a picture on the 20th birthday. She tweeted like a happy 20th birthday, Mamma Mia. And it was the wedding photo for last year's cast. The one that, you know, we did all the special like 20 photos.
Yes. Yeah.
It was that, like a glittery gif of that. And Cher tweeted it and I was like, Cher, see my face. Cher has tweeted my face. I am going to die happy. Cher has seen me. She's seen me. She knows I exist. She probably didn't look too intently, but I'm quite near the middle.
Let's look at it.
Do you know what I mean?
She looked at your face. She's aware. And I know we don't want to look ahead because it's going to be so sad when you leave, but when this chapter does end, have you started thinking about the kind of thing that you want to do next? What's getting you excited at the moment?
Do you know what? It's really hard. I think... again, because of the way that I started out, I've always been ambitious, I'd say, but I'm kind of like, whatever you'd like to give me, that would be really great, thanks. So I think the thing I'm looking forward to most is just those auditions coming in and agent calling me and going, okay, you're in for this on Tuesday. And one of the joys for me is when you get the name of the project or you get, so you kind of research it online and you find out and then you listen to all the music, you know, if it already exists. It might not already exist. It might be totally and utterly brand new and you can't find a single shred of information about it on the internet, which is also equally as exciting because you know it's going to be a totally different creative process. I just look forward to that, very simply, that phone call or that email to say about the next audition and where that is, because that could be the start of the next Mamma Mia journey for me, the next Spring Awakening journey for me. It could, you know, it's the possibilities are endless at this point, I feel. It's a very healthy, positive outlook, Lucy. Please remember that when you are... When you finish Mamma Mia and you're desperate for your next job, remember that.
Well, you've got this recorded.
Yes,
so.
it's literally recorded. So, I will listen to my past self. My future self will listen to my past self.
I think that's a good way to kind of end it.
I think so, right?
It's like a full circle moment. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. What an absolute joy.
And enjoy the rest of your time here. Enjoy Christmas on the island.
Christmas on the island. Lush.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Mamma Mia is currently booking at the Novello Theatre until the 19th of September 2020. Thank you so much to Lucy for taking time out pre-show to record this episode. Make sure you go and see her as Sophie before she says farewell to the island. She is incredible. And there we go. Just like that, we are all done with In The Frame for 2019. Thank you so much for listening and thank you so much for your support this year. If you're feeling sad, make sure you check out our other podcast, The West End Frame Show, to stay up to date with everything going on in theatreland. As a special end-of-year treat, we have not one but two episodes going out next week on Monday and Friday. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and write a little review, and head over to westendframe.co.uk for more info about all of our podcasting adventures. You can also find West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'll be back next year on Friday the 3rd of January with the incredible Lizzie B, star of Becoming Nancy and Kinky Boots, who is about to star as Tracy Turnblad in the West End revival of Hairspray. Have an amazing Christmas and stay tuned for lots more episodes of In The Frame next year.